Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
The Best in the World podcast with Richard Parr.
Hello and welcome to The Best in the World with Richard Parr, where I speak to Olympic champions, world record holders and world number ones to find out what they do to become the very best. Merry Christmas, everyone. I hope you all had a wonderful day and are looking forward to the new year. Have you thought about your New Year's resolutions? Of course, we love goal setting on this program, so I hope you have written down your goals for the new year and try and keep with them, however hard it might be. Try and set maybe a few short-term goals and also some longer-term goals. Don't just decide to do something for the whole year, or don't just decide to do something forever. Try and make these incremental goals, because that's what the greatest sports stars on the planet do, as we have learnt from the previous 96 episodes of The Best in the World with Richard Parr. On episode 97, I speak to Christine Lilly. Christine Lilly has been capped more times than anyone in football, man or woman. Christine played for the United States 354 times, scoring 130 goals. She won two Olympic gold medals and two World Cups. Wow, what a career. And it was an absolute pleasure to speak to Christine on this week's Best in the World with Richard Parr. We talked many things about her career, including how she made her debut for the national team at a very young age of 16. And she talks about how she coped with being at school and also playing. Talks about the longevity of her career, how she thinks she was able to manage to have a career as long as she did. Talks about her teammates, the players who were her mentors and the players she got on best with on the pitch. And we also talk about what she's up to now as a coach and as a mother. A really great chat this week with Christine Lilly on The Best in the World. You know what? Let's get straight to it. On this week's Best in the World with Richard Parr, it's Christine Lilly.
The Best in the World podcast with Richard Parr.
Christine Lilly, welcome to The Best in the World with Richard Parr, an Olympic champion, a World Cup winner. So great to have you on the programme. Of course, you retired a few years ago now. So let's start this chat by finding out what you're up to at the moment, please.
What am I up to? Well, thanks for having me, first off. It's nice to be on the show. And I mean, I retired in January of 2011, and had a kid after that. And then I was, I do a lot of teaching lessons for kids, clinics, private lessons. I was coaching for the past 3 years, one of the assistants at University of Texas. And then I currently just moved back to the Boston area where I lived prior to that. And now hopefully still working with kids, doing lessons, and kind of see where life will take me at this point.
Oh, exciting. It's always good to kind of give back. And is there anything that you teach the kids now that you wish you knew when you were playing?
I think just more technical work than we did. The game has just grown so much. I think the knowledge of the coaches is better. I mean, when I was playing, it was dad that were coaching me, and they had no idea about soccer. So I think that's what's a little bit different for the kids these days. They're all pretty much most of their coaches, if they're at a club level, have played the game or know the game. So that definitely helps the kids. And for me, all I want the kids I teach is to feel good about themselves and confident, because I think a lot of the confidence goes up and down in the game. And if you can find being more confident, finding ways to get back to your confidence, that really helps players grow.
Mm. Were you always confident throughout your career?
No, I mean, for the most part, yeah, but there's ebb and flow. I mean, I think when I got later in my career, the confidence, which is ironic, you think after you've been playing so long, after I had my first child and came back, I wasn't playing game for the year. So of course you're not feeling like, oh, overly confident. So it was a little ebb and flow there. But then once you start to play a little bit and get the comfort again and support from your teammates, it comes back.
Mm. I just want to talk about the coaching as well. Finally, just when you are teaching young players, what are some of the attributes that they show that you can tell they're going to be really good?
Well, you know, it's funny. I'm coaching these two girls that have been coaching for like on and off for 5 years. And I don't mean every day. This is like sporadic. But I started when the youngest one was like 10, and she was really athletic and really had a really good touch on the ball. And then she's grown up a little bit and then has to get readjusted to her longer legs, her body. So she still is a good soccer player, but not as apparent as when she was 10. Mm. Not saying that she's not going to be, but so I think it's hard to tell when kids, when they're younger and they have the natural ability, you can see it, but then it depends on how they grow and how they handle it. Because I think, especially on guys' side, I mean, I think the guys grow from 14 to 18 is an incredible growth process. And I think for girls too. So I think you just have to see how they're going to keep growing and what they're going to do with their per se God-given talent that you see at a young age.
Mm. And of course, you are renowned for playing for the national team from about the age of 15, really, really young. When did you first start playing the sport, Christine?
I started playing when I was about 6 years old, and my brother played soccer, so I wanted to do what he did. And I played just for our town team. You wake up at 8 o'clock on Saturday mornings and go play a game. My team color was light blue, and you named your team. I don't remember what our name was, and I just loved to be outside playing. And we got oranges at halftime. And to be honest, I loved the oranges at halftime.
I read that on your website. I think you had 13 things about your career or something like that.
Yes, and yes.
The number one was the oranges. I used to love the oranges at halftime.
I'm
with you on that. Yeah. Do you think they actually, you know, there's so much now about nutrition and everything like that. Do they actually help, do you think? Or are they just tasty?
I think they're just tasty. And who knows? I mean, some of the natural sugars in it, I mean, could help, but it's something light on your stomach. So kids, but I think it was just something, I don't know why it started, but it's a great thing. I can remember being on the national team, and it was probably like 5 or 6 years in on the national team, and we were in China and they had orange slices. I was like, oh my God, this is great. but yeah, I mean, I don't think they hurt you. That's for sure.
So I'm imagining with your coaching right now, you're always bringing a big cooler of sliced oranges.
I'm trying to. My kids, one of my kids likes it, one doesn't. So I'm like, come on now.
Oh, no, amazing. And so as you're growing up, when did it become more than just playing in the morning and eating oranges? When did you start to realize that, oh, I'm actually quite good at this?
Well, you know, when I went to high school, I from second to eighth grade, so probably about 9 years old till about 13, I played with the boys, and I was the only girl on the team. So I kind of knew I could hang with the boys. I mean, still at that age, you're pretty equal if you're all kind of at the same level. Then I went to high school and I couldn't play with the boys cause they had a girls team. So I played varsity. We call it varsity in America. And I was just a lot better than a lot of the girls. So I think I was like, wow, all right. This is pretty good. And then I made the national team when I was a junior in high school. And then I was like, oh, all right, well, this is cool. But then the thing for me, it was cool. I was on the, got asked to join the team, and then I was surrounded by all these great players. I was like, oh my gosh, what am I doing here? So it was kind of, I was like, wow, and I was good in high school, but look at these players too. So that was kind of a moment where I was like, all right, this is pretty cool.
Yeah. Was it intimidating in any way?
It was, because I was 16 and some of these girls were 21, 23. And when you're 16 and players are 23, you're thinking they're really old. you know, you're like, gosh, they're in college.
Yeah.
So it was a little intimidating. But the cool thing was when you stepped on the field, they tore you up. And then when you stepped off the field, they're like, hey, how you doing? Mm. You know, what, finding information about you, being there and helping you along. So I was nervous the entire, my first trip, so nervous. And I think the nerves probably stayed in there for a couple of years until I got my feet a little bit more wet.
You say when you got your feet a little bit more wet, did you then start to get a process of coping with nerves at all, or was it just more just experience?
I think it's more experience at that time. It was more, I was starting to play in games. My first game I played, I did score a goal. And I think after I scored that first goal, I was like, oh, okay, maybe I can handle this. You know, anytime you score, I mean, this is attacking players. Defenders, I don't know what they feel when they step out there. But anytime an attacking player, if you get a goal under your belt, you're like, all right.
Yeah.
So I felt pretty good about that. And that was my first, I think my first or second game in. And then I was like, all right, I didn't settle my morals at all. But I was like, okay, and then just experience. And even, I mean, I remember 87 and then the World Cup was in 91. And 91, I was still a young player on the team. Mm. So you still have, you know, the veterans and the older girls around you that you're learning from and watching and taking orders from and making sure that you're doing all right.
Was there any one player in particular who took you under their wing?
There was a few, but Karen Gabera, who was Karen Jennings at the time, she became like my big sister. Our coach at the time, Anson Dorrance, had matched. There was me, Julie Fowdy, Mia Hamm, and Joy Fawcett were the four young players that joined the team. And he kind of matched each person up with an older player, per se, to say, oh, here's your big sis, little sis thing. And Karen Jennings Gabera was mine and couldn't have been more perfect person for me. Mm. She was great, really helped me, and I played right behind her on the field, so I watched her tear defenders apart, and I was like, oh my gosh, this girl is unbelievable.
The Best in the World podcast with Richard Parr.
More from Christine in just a moment. And normally I spend this moment to tell you about a product or service that I personally use, or even if you want to support our Patreon page. And I don't want to do that today because you've all spent enough money buying gifts for your loved ones over the Christmas period. I know how much of an expensive time of year it is. But what you could do for me, which would be really, really great if you do want to give back in some way to this show, is just to show some love on social media. Follow my Twitter page at Richard_Parr or the Sportacino page at Sportacino, and the same on Facebook. We've got a Sportacino Facebook page, there's Richard Parr Facebook page, there's also a Best in the World with Richard Parr Facebook page. In fact, that last one's probably the most important, so if you do one thing, please go and like that page. And if there's any episodes that you really enjoy on our podcast, please share them. Please tell people about this show so we can continue to make it grow. I didn't mean to rhyme there, but it actually did. Anyway, let's return to the conversation with the World Cup and Olympic champion footballer. It's Christine Lilly.
The Best in the World podcast with Richard Parr.
Recently on this podcast, I spoke to the Olympic swimming champion, Brooke Bennett, and she won Olympic gold when she was 16 years old. And similar situation for you of being 16, playing for the national team, scoring for the national team. What was it like then to go back to high school?
It was awesome. It was so great. I mean, I think back going from the national team back to high school, and I wasn't traveling as much back then. I mean, we weren't as busy as the national team is now. So I think I had two or three trips the whole time I was in high school for my junior and senior year. But I couldn't wait to get back to my friends. I couldn't wait to get back to the field and feel comfortable again. I didn't have as many nerves in high school because I was pretty confident in that level of play. So it was a really good ebb and flow for me to go up with the women's team and be at a different level and then come back and be like, oh, I can take a deep breath now and I can just play and relax a little bit. So I really loved it. And I have two of my best friends still are from high school. So the fact I had their support and was great. And to come back to all my friends and all the gossip of high school.
Fantastic. And you obviously played in some amazing teams. And we'll ask you a bit more in detail about Olympic Games and World Cups shortly. But one of the rowers I've spoken to on this program, Ben Hunt Davis, he was saying how on a rowing team, you don't have to get on to be successful. Does that work the same for football? Did you find a correlation of the teams where you got on better personally, that you performed better, or doesn't it really matter?
Well, I personally think it matters. And what kind of rowing was he? A tube man one, or what was he rowing?
Eight man. He won the Olympic gold in Sydney in 2000.
Well, you know, I don't know. For me, I think it totally matters. And maybe it's a more female compared to male thing. I'm not sure. Mm. But when I think about to our most successful teams, I mean, 96 and 99 come to mind pretty close, and 04. All those teams were pretty close. And maybe I'm coming from a different perspective because a lot of those girls I played with for 17 years, you know, we grew up together. But I would say for the most part, the core of the team, I mean, you didn't get along with everyone. Didn't get along. It wasn't roses the whole time. But you respected each other. And I think maybe that's a better way to look at it. We thought we had respect for each other, whether we were friendly off the field as much or not. We did respect each other. And I think if you have that respect, then you can accomplish great things. And we had that in those good teams, along with good chemistry, and we had a lot of fun.
Were there any players in particular who you just loved playing with and felt you almost had like a telepathic connection with when you were playing?
Yeah, I mean, Mia and I, we joined the team at the same time, and Julie Foudy, but Mia and I especially, I mean, we played with each other at college and on the national team. And there would be a lot of times when I'd get the ball and she'd already start moving and I would know where she's going. And we did have that kind of ability to read each other. But I think that's due to playing together for so long. You know, Julie Foudy, I could read, you know, and they're just through time. But I would say Mia is really one of them that we kind of knew where she was. Or even later on, Michelle Akers. I mean, if I always had the ball on the outside, I knew Michelle was going to be in that box and I just needed a flight up there and she headed in for me. Mm. So I think due time you had players, but Mia was probably one of the ones that we really worked well together.
And you and Mia scored so many goals. I believe you got 130 international goals. Do you have a favorite?
I do, actually. Well, I remember my first one, so that I have to say when I was young on that team. It was kind of a volley, bouncing ball volley. And my Karen Gabero, you know, set it up for me. And then...
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
In the World Cup in 2003, we were playing Sweden in the opening game. And Mia, funny, I was just with Mia a little while ago. We were just talking about this goal. And it was a ball... ball from Mia, someone played it into her, Abby played it into her, and she was probably about between the 12 and the 18, and I was coming up the left side, she was probably on the right side of the goal, and Abby played her, she kind of flicked it, laid it back to me, and I just nailed it, and when I hit it, I was like, that's going in. So I remember that pretty well, and the great thing about that goal is we were practicing that in practice the day before.
Now, you mentioned 96, 99, 2004. You also won in 91. Was there a favourite victory there? Was there a World Cup or an Olympic crown which matters the most to you?
Well, 99. I mean, you can't really ever shy away from that one. And I think for us, it was a bigger project because we were promoting the World Cup for 18 months. You know, we got the bid for it, and then we... as a team and a country and the organizing staff just went on this big promotion to make sure we were filling the seats. And we had no idea that that was going to happen, but we were hopeful and we did all this work to try to make it happen. So after getting to the final or winning the semis and getting to the final and selling out every game we played in, we were like, oh my gosh, we just did something incredible. And then now we're like, okay, now we just got to win. So winning really, winning was for us. And then everything else was making sure those fans were there. So that was pretty special. And then 04 was the last Olympics with Julie, Joy, and Mia. That was our last big event. And that was pretty special because everyone was kind of counting us out. We were older. Saying, oh, they're too old, it's la la la. But we end up pulling that off, and I remember being on the field, I'm like, oh, I don't want this moment to end, because I knew it would be the last with those guys.
Was the 99 final the one where you cleared the ball off the line in extra time?
Yes.
So I can see why that game matters even more to you.
I happened to be, doing what I was supposed to do. All I gotta say, it was great.
What about Sydney 2000, going in as the world champions, losing to Norway in the final? How was that experience?
You know, that was one of the most painful games of my life. Just really a heartbreaker. Because the whole big picture with it is, we in the first half we had so many chances, and we should have been up on them. But like the game of soccer, it doesn't always happen. And Norway was a good team, a really good team, And they went into, well, we tied it up with, minutes left in the game to push it to overtime. And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, we're gonna win this thing. And then overtime comes, and you know, back then it was golden goal, which I really like, but not being on the losing side of it.
Yeah.
And they scored, and I was standing. I was looking back towards our defender who was trying to clear a ball that their attacking players were going on, Dogney Milgram, who I ended up playing with in the pro league. She was on my Boston team. And so I was looking back, and as the ball went down to her foot and took a shot, I could see the ball going in before it was in, and my heart just broke. Mm. So it was a pretty devastating loss, I have to say, and one that we didn't forget. And then, you know, came back at the next Olympics to win gold.
Mm. Was there anything you learned from that defeat, or was it just one of those things and you just had to kind of get past it?
You know, obviously, I think more at the time when we were probably closer looking back at it, we're probably like, you know, obviously, the game itself, I don't know if we could have done much more except finish our chances. Mm. You know, we played, you know, obviously not the best, but we played our heart out. And if we finished the chances we had, you know, it would have been a different story. So as for the field, no, I don't think there was much more that we could have done besides be perfect.
How do you look at that medal now? What do you think when you look at that silver medal?
Well, every time I talk about it, it's the prettiest medal I have. the silver and the blue ribbon really look good together, but it is the most painful. And I tell the story about it a lot. And I think the biggest part of it for me, is when we were up there, you know, as a teammate, you don't want to let your teams down. And then as, you know, a child or a sister of family, you don't want to let your family down. And in that game, after we lost, my parents were there, and it took me forever to look over to the family section. Like that we had the podium up there, and that we were standing up there, and I was like, oh, I don't want to look over there because I don't want to let my parents down because we lost. Mm. And every time I talk about this, I get so choked up. It's so funny. But but the thing was, when I finally looked over there, they were so proud. Mm. And for me, I love telling the story to kids because it doesn't matter if you win or lose. I mean, it matters, but it doesn't. Like, your parents are going to still love you. The sun's still going to come out. The birds are going to sing, you know, and life's going to go on.
Yeah.
So you just have to remember that and remember the pain and try to just make sure it's smiles the next time you play a game. Because it's going to happen in life. There's going to be so many ups and downs. Mm. You don't know when it's going to happen. And you hope it doesn't happen as frequently, the downs as the ups.
And your career ended up having a lot more ups than downs. So.
Yeah, I was happy about that. Yeah, so I've been pretty fortunate and play with some great people that have helped that happen.
You played part of your club career in Sweden. What was that like?
You know, it was great. I'm not such a traveler per se. I'm a homebody. I'd rather be in my home comfort zone. I'm a big comfort person. So it was a little bit outside my comfort zone to do that, which I'm glad I did. I was only over there for a short period of time, but it was great. I was over there in 93 for just a short time. Then I went back in 05. And when I went back in 05, I went to play for Pia. She was coaching the Boston Breakers in our pro league, and then she went back over there when that ended. So I wanted to go there. And I basically, after that, I don't know how many months I was there, I was so technically sound because we did technical work in the morning and then we waited for the other players to have practice in the afternoon. And it was really great. It was great to be in another culture. It was great to see how they train. And I'm glad I did it and had that opportunity.
Mm, fantastic. Yeah, that was going to be my next question. Was there anything you learned from their training there which you weren't doing in the States? But it sounds like you're doing more technical stuff.
Yeah, the technical, just because we had a smaller numbers in the morning. And then it was just, their mentality was just a little bit different than the U.S. But they all were strong, very strong players on the ball. And that's something I really you knew playing against them, but then being around a lot of the game in Sweden, it was just really more of a long ball game at the time. I mean, obviously that's changed a little bit. But it was fun. It's a great experience to try another culture and see what it's like.
What about when you traveled to different countries for tournaments? How did you adjust to that?
It was good. I mean, when I was traveling with the national team, it was easy because you had your buddies around. You know, you weren't alone and all that. So that was not bad. And you got to experience some of the culture. I mean, a lot of times everyone's like, oh, you got to go here and there. I'm like, yeah, we did, but we didn't get to travel as much because we were focused on our game. So it wasn't like we were sightseeing every day, but we did get opportunities to see things and see how other parts of the world live. And that, for me, opened my eyes. And it was just an experience that I never imagined.
How would you relax in between games during tournaments? What type of things would you do?
Well, back in the day, we read books. We had DVD players that we had bring all these DVDs. We played games, that one for walks, we were interacting with each other back in the early days. And then obviously cell phones came to use and computers, and everyone got a little bit more not private, but individual in their downtime sometimes. I have to say I liked it better when we didn't have anything and you just kind of read books and with your teammates and doing stuff.
Have you got a book you'd recommend, Christine?
I'm reading one right now called The Lilac Sisters, and it's about World War II and Germany and France and just what all happened during that time. And it's a great book. It's not really a happy book. It's amazing what people had to go through in that time period. But also I read the book Unbroken, which is along the World War II lines as well. I don't know if you've read that book.
No, I haven't.
It's the pilot, Louis Zapparini. He just died recently, and he was a pilot, and he got captured, and just all the stuff that it's just amazing. You know, the will of people, what they had to go through just to stay alive. And I'm not a huge World War II person. I just happen to have read these books.
not a bit of a history buff.
No, I'm not. I wish I was, but I'm intrigued by some of that. I'm intrigued by the strength of the human body and mind than anything.
And that's what we try and do on this podcast every week, try and find out what makes amazing champions such as yourself. And I think that's a good thing for my next question, because you did play, was it 354 times for the United States. You had a really long career. What do you think you were kind of doing to keep such a long career going?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, my grandmother lived to be 92. She had great genes. I mean, she walked everywhere. She never had a driver's license. So maybe I had a little bit of that stamina from her. You know, I think mentally, my mental part of my mindset is pretty strong. Not necessarily the ebb and flow of confidence, but like to push through things. I was always pretty fit, and I think that helped me have a longer career. And then I enjoyed it. I enjoyed what I did. I enjoyed playing soccer. I enjoyed the people I was playing with. You know, and at the time when my buddies were retiring, you know, they were going to move on with their lives. They were all married at the time. I wasn't married. So I was like, what am I going to do if I retire? So I wasn't ready. I wasn't at that point. And that's when I met my husband. So he got to, you know, share with me the last 6 years of my career. So that was nice to have him a part of that.
Fantastic. And when you finally did decide to retire, what was the motivation and how difficult was it?
It was hard. It was right after qualification. So we just qualified for the next World Cup, 11. Was it 11? I can't keep track. No, 10. No, 11.
11,
Yeah. And we just had finished qualifiers, and I had just come back. I had a child in 08, so I missed the Olympics in 08. And then I came back and I played in the Pro League in 2009 and 10. And the 2010 season is when Pia, the head coach of the U.S. team at the time, you know, asked me to come back in. And I was like, all right. So obviously you never really turned down an opportunity to represent your country. I went back in. That's where the ebb and flow of the confidence was up and down, because I had been out of the loop with the team a bit. And I wasn't playing very much. And then we went through qualifiers. And after qualifiers, my husband and I were deciding I'm having, you know, more children. And this time I was 40. So I was like, okay, I can't hold off having kids. So I'm like, all right, let's see. If we're fortunate to get pregnant, then we have a child and then life goes on. If we don't, then I'll just keep playing. Well, I got pregnant, so that was kind of a part of it. And I also was tired. I was tired. I loved playing, but the training makes it hard. If I could just play in games and be fit, I was like, oh, this is great. But it was really the training that made it hard. And I love taking my oldest daughter with me on trips and all that, having her part of it. But it just got a little bit tiring. And I was like, I just can't do this again. So then I decided to retire, and it was hard. But I think for me, the transition of being pregnant helped. A lot of us athletes, we suddenly stop something, and then they were like, oh my gosh, what am I going to do now?
Yeah.
So being pregnant, I think, helped me have a little bit of a transition and be like, well, I can't do anything now because I'm pregnant. So that's great. but it was time, and I wouldn't change, you know, anything about it.
And do you have two future soccer stars in your household now?
I got two young girls. Yes, they both are playing the game. My oldest is doing well, and my youngest is just getting her feet wet in it. So they seem to enjoy it, and if they like it, great. If not, I'm okay with that too.
Yeah, as long as they enjoy the oranges, that's the most important.
Yeah, that's right. I got to get the younger one getting into that.
Well, Christine, thank you so much for your time today. I really enjoyed speaking to you. Before you go, can you let us know where we can continue to follow your journey online or on social media, please?
Yeah, I'm at Twitter at Christine Lilly. I have a website, ChristineLilly13.com. And I also continue to do camps with some former teammates, Mia Hamm, and they're called the Team First Soccer Academy. And we travel all around the country, United States, teaching kids. So if anyone wants to see a visit of us, just reach out to teamfirstsoccer.com and we could come to your area.
For me, that's learning from the very best. So I think anyone who's interested in soccer should get on that camp, because that sounds amazing. Christine, thank you for being on the podcast, and thank you for being the best in the world.
Thank you so much for having me.
The Best in the World podcast with Richard Parr.
Awesome chat there with Christine. And I just realised she is our first footballer or soccer player, depending which part of the world you're from, who has been on The Best in the World with Richard Parr. And normally, if I've had a guest on the programme in a sport that we've had before, I might recommend you go back and listen to some other sports. But as Christine is the first, I thought I'd quickly have a reminder of some of the interviews I've done and pick out some of my favourites, which I think you would really appreciate listening to. Ones I'd really highly recommend, and this is going to be a really long list. I really enjoyed speaking to Joe Jacoby, Chad Hedrick, Gretchen Blyler, Stephanie Rice, Natalie Coughlin, Katarina Stefanidi. There's many, many others. Rebecca Soni, Misty Hyman. There are some really, really good ones. One of the earliest ones, David Campisi. I'd recommend all of them. And I'm not going to be here naming all 97 episodes, but those are some of the real standout ones. So if you go and look at the list of the previous episodes on acast.com/best, on iTunes, or at sportacino.com, if you see any of those which I've just mentioned, definitely click, definitely play, definitely listen, because you can learn from them. Trust me, they're really good interviews. All right, thank you so much for listening to this week's episode with Christine Lilly. Have a wonderful new year, and guess what? I'll speak to you again in 2018. Goodbye for now.
The Best in the World podcast with Richard Parr.
Thank you.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.